Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. I understand we have Justice McCoy's class from Texas Wesleyan, Texas A&M now, I guess I should say. We're glad to have you visiting with us. We do have one case on our oral argument docket this morning, Faust and Mariquin versus State of Texas. And I understand counsel have checked in, is that correct? Okay. And if the clerk will announce who will be arguing today, please.
May it please the court, Mr. Shelby Sharp to argue for the appellant and Mr. Charles Mellon to argue for the state. All right.
Mr. Sharp.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. This is a speech case at its core that's come before you in a criminal matter. How do we know for sure it's a speech case? Every one of the opinions cited by the state except one is a speech case. So even though they say it's not a speech case, it really is. The arrest, the trial, the conviction were based on Section 3815A1 for disobeying a police order not to cross a police line. But yet other members of the public were permitted to cross. So that raises the speech issue. A law can be unconstitutional in two ways. On its face, it is regulating or punishing constitutionally protected conduct. But you can have a law that's very fine, but it's applied in an unconstitutional manner to prosecute speech, which is protected. Now, what is the issue before this court? The issue is, were the arrest, prosecution, and conviction for crossing a police line that other members of the public were permitted to cross, but they weren't, and according to the testimony of the two sergeants, because of what they might, and you notice I said might, say down the block? In fact, one of the police officers, Sergeant DeJoyas, said, we weren't keeping them from going because we thought they were going to engage in an altercation. So the conduct issue is clear out of this based on that testimony right there. Why were they kept back? Because of what they might say going down the block and what they might say when they got there. Now, this police line had only three reasons for existing. Except for the church group of which Faust and Mariquin were a part, all the other members of the public were permitted to cross. So they're singling out a group and saying, you can't cross. So why would they be doing it? As I said a moment ago, Sergeant DeJoyas said it wasn't because they thought they were going to go down there and get in a fight or engage in altercations. It was what they might say. And Sergeant Ginaldo also said the same thing. Now, here's what the state's argument is. It was not for something said, but because they disobeyed a police officer in crossing the line. That's what the state says. But yet, when you get into all of their arguments, they give a time, place, and manner defense. That's a confession and avoidance. That's what that is. When you confess that you're regulating speech, the Constitution is permissible for very narrow limits that you can control where speech is given and how it may be given. The fallacy is that this police line completely prevented the speech. Both officers testified that where these people were held, even with sound amplification, they couldn't reach the audience they wanted to reach down across from the convention center. No way they could do it. Now, the state cites some buffer zone cases. Hey, those are fine. But there's one thing about a buffer zone. While it keeps some distance between groups, you still can communicate. Here it's undisputed. There was no way that they could communicate that many blocks from 3rd Street down to 8th and 9th.
Counsel, don't the buffer zone cases also apply to all peoples? You can't have a buffer zone case that allows some people through and some people not through.
You're right. In fact, that's one of the things that I appreciated. by the kind comment that was made in here. When you're going to apply something, it's got to be even-handed. You can't single out a group. This group got singled out. I mean, there's no question about that. And they said they singled the group out because of some things that took place the preceding year. Now, remember, the doctrine of time, place, and manner requires that all of the requirements be met, not just some of them. And they don't even meet all of them here. Let's look at the time restriction. The brief says, well, this line wasn't going to be permanent. It was going to be temporary. But yet when I cross-examined one of the arresting officers, I said, well, did you ever tell Faust and Marquin that? No. So how did they know that this was, quote, a temporary? All they knew is they were blocked and they were never informed after a certain period of time, we will permit you to go on down the street. They were never given that information. So their time deal, that's the fallacy in it. What about the place? As I said, the place is where you can't communicate. Buffer zones always permit communication. Always. Not sometimes, but always. And then what about the manner? And this is where, as Justice Walker just said, it's got to be evenly applied. In fact, quoting from their brief, it says that the restriction of speech must be applied evenly and cannot focus on a particular group. That's straight out of the state's brief. I mean, I wish I'd put that quote in there, but I didn't think about that quote, but it's very good. Of course, I wasn't expecting they were going to make that argument. Otherwise, I would have anticipated it.
Does the record reflect how these two particular individuals were identified by the two officers, I believe, that testified?
They knew that they were part of this church group, and they knew that based on apparently prior experience. They knew who they were. Okay. In fact, Faust is the pastor. Marquin is a member of the church, and so they knew who they were. And this group had been there the year before, and they'd had a police line the year before, but they were permitted to go through the police line. This year, not so. In fact, if you will watch a less than 1 minute tape that's in the record, a DVD, of the police standing there and listen to what the communication is, and then watch members of the public just going right on by, and they attempt to get in and go behind them, bang, that's when they get arrested and taken to jail. You know, I've represented 4 sheriffs. I'm very much for law enforcement. And breach of the peace, I agree. Breaches of the peace have got to be dealt with. But there's a way you deal with breaches of the peace, and this wasn't it. There's no way an ordinary citizen can look at that tape and come away with anything but incredulity that it happened. You know, the Gregory versus City of Chicago, United States Supreme Court case, cited by the state, is right with us. What happened there? The police told some protesters, you've got to break up because this group over here is getting unruly. They didn't stop their protest. So what did they do? They arrested the protesters. Supreme Court of the United States says, no way. That is a prior restraint. You deal with the people being unruly, but they have the right to do that. It's a heckler's veto. In fact, that's the terminology for it. This police line was a heckler's veto, plain and simple, under Gregory versus City of Chicago. Now, they have cited a recent case of this court a few months ago, the Momentoff versus State, because there a conviction took place under this very code provision. And so that code provision is here before you. We're alleging it's unconstitutionally applied in this situation. Now, what was the problem in Momentoff? The folks didn't have a permit to put a tent across a sidewalk. So, yeah, they got arrested under that, but nobody in the public could do that. That's a proper regulation of what you can do, where you can do it. So the arrest was for violating a city ordinance, and it was done under that code provision.
Well, actually, the arrest was for not leaving the tent when they were told to leave.
Right.
It wasn't for violating the code ordinance. The actual arrest was.
It was not leaving the tent.
For violating the exact same statute as in this case.
Okay, but let me say this. Nobody in the public could do that.
Okay, I'm not disagreeing with your analysis. Yeah. I'm just disagreeing with what provision of the law they were arrested for.
Well, let me say this. According to your opinion, this code provision was what was cited in the opinion. That's all I'm saying. I looked at the opinion and saw, and I figured the reason they brought it was because we're here before under that same code provision. But the key thing is this. If certain members of the public can do it, then when you pick out certain other members, you've got to have very, very narrow reasons for picking those out. Here in Momentoff, nobody could have done what they did. That's the major distinction between Momentoff and the case that's before you. So what do we have here? Why did the police do what they did? What were they saying? They were saying simply this. Because we'd had problems the year before, we were going to set up this police line and not let them go. Well, unfortunately, United States versus Coquinda says you can't do that. They also thought there might be an altercation. Well, Tinker versus Des Moines says you can't do that. You can't stop the energy. And the effect was a heckler's veto. What should have happened here? The Ninth Circuit case of Collins versus Jordan lays it out. You have a sufficient police presence, and if somebody begins to act in violation of the law, you arrest them when they act. That's what should have happened. But based on the facts of this case, looking at the U.S. Supreme Court, and in particular the Chicago case, these convictions cannot stand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Mr. Mallon.
Please the court, counsel. I've practiced before this court for many years, and this is the first time I'm going to say I'm guilty. I'm guilty of buying into Mr. Sharp's argument that this is a First Amendment case. You know, all the stuff with the content neutral, significant government interest, and alternate channels for communication of the information. This is not a First Amendment case. He was not arrested for they were not arrested. The appellants were not arrested for demonstrating. They were arrested for violating the skirmish line. And Justice Walker called it the barrier, and whether all individuals have to be stopped for the barrier. I believe all individuals are subject to the barrier who are protesting or who are engaged in the conduct, but individual citizens who are going to work I don't think they're subject to the barrier. I mean, they don't get to interfere with the everyday lives of citizens of this community. The point I'm trying to make is individuals do not get to choose which laws they're going to abide by and whether they're going to obey a lawful peace officer. I mean, if we had it any other way, it'd be chaos. A individual doesn't have the right to not stop because he believes the peace officer or arresting officer doesn't have probable cause or reasonable suspicion.
Was there any evidence in the record that either one of these individuals had done anything prior to trying to cross this line?
I'm glad you asked that question. There was no evidence that they had violated the law prior to the time that they set up the skirmish line. However, they had information concerning their past behavior from the previous gay pride parades in 2011.
How do we know these people weren't trying to just go to work? I mean, are you going to say just because they've done so in the past, which of course the law says you can't look at?
Yes, you can look at the past behavior. And that's why I cited Ward versus Rock against discrimination. Which in his, Mr. Shelby, hurt my feelings in his reply brief, kind of mocks my use of that case. But if you look at how they analyze the violation of the First Amendment, whether they could, the courts, the trial court, and the attorneys and the peace officers could utilize past behavior to set up a restriction which is reasonable in time, manner, and place, Ward versus Rock, all they're doing is looking at Rock against discrimination's behavior prior to. You know, that was a case where they Rock against discrimination would have concerts. and raise money concerning to stop discrimination. They set up I think it was Washington, D.C., or one of the cities where it was involved. The bans that they were used were too loud. And so the city promulgated restrictions concerning decibel levels and the amplification system. And they specifically looked at the behavior of rock against the concert promoters and how they utilized the bands and how they intentionally wanted it out loud into disturbing the neighbors. And they looked at all this behavior. So I believe it was perfectly proper to look at Kingdom Baptist Church behavior in prior incidents to stop them. Because they had if we're going to go into the First Amendment, let's take the three prongs. I mean, the standard of review, which Mr. Shelby so artfully sets out in his brief. One was a restriction, content neutral. Two, was there significant government interest? And three, were there alternate channels for communication of the information? Well, in this particular case, in making a determination whether the behavior of the police officer is content neutral, the Supreme Court has never said that you can't look at the content of the speech to determine whether their course of conduct comes within the prescription of the law. And that's Hill versus Colorado, cited in the brief. So they were able to look at the hateful speech, which Kingdom Baptist Church.
In this instance, they hadn't delivered any speech.
Pardon me?
In this instance, these two individuals, at least the evidence, as I understand it, does not show that at the point that they were arrested that they had delivered any speech or made any speech. It was just in anticipation of what they might say when they got down the road. Yet there were supporters of the gay pride parade down the road who were allowed to go. So how's that content neutral? Number one, it's anticipating what they might say. And number two, how is it content neutral?
Content neutral because they weren't arrested for demonstrating. They weren't arrested for what they had said in the past or what they had said during the parade or what they were going to say. They were arrested because they didn't obey a peace officer and they broached the skirmish line. That's why it's content neutral. I think you have to separate what they were arrested for and what the course of conduct which they...
But they were arrested because the police officers anticipated that they were going to make certain comments that were against the people who were in the parade. So how is that content neutral? I understand what they were arrested for, but they were only arrested because it was anticipated that they were going to deliver a certain message.
I disagree with that assessment, Your Honor, and it's because that it was not the content of the speech as much as the deliberate or verbal and visual assault, which justified the prescription by the officers. Based on past behavior, because they had altercations based on their speech. I mean, and even during, and I think the record's pretty clear, even during this parade, the appellants, at least one of the appellants, appellant Faust, engaged in fighting words at the skirmish line. I think that they can take that into consideration, the reaction their speech will cause. And I think that the significant government is keeping of the peace, public safety. Not all speech is protected. Fighting words is not protected. I mean, the United States government has been prosecuting people for the last 50 years for speech. I mean, I can go back and reach back in the treasure trove of old cases, H. Rap Brown. You don't get to cross state lines and incite a riot. And that, not all speech is protected. Fighting words aren't protected, even in Texas, under the breach of the disturbing the peace statutes. So I believe the actual arrest and the conduct for which they were arrested for was content neutral when he crossed the skirmish line. And whether it was a proper skirmish line, whether the police officers should have put it up, I think that's irrelevant. The individual.
But the point is, they were arrested when they crossed the skirmish line, but other members of the public were allowed to cross the skirmish line.
I don't think they crossed the skirmish line. I think they were walking around on the sidewalks going down towards 9th Street. So I don't think they crossed the skirmish line. I mean, I think that they set it up from east to west on the street.
So you're saying that these two individuals did not follow the public, did not follow a group of the public and try to cross in the same manner?
No, they were not behaving in the same manner as the rest of the public that was allowed to go go down to 9th
I said, did they follow them on the same path?
Could they have?
I'm saying, did they?
No,
I'm asking
they didn't
did
follow
they
the same...
follow the members of the public when they?
No, they did not. They confirmed that the police officer at their skirmish line. They were told they couldn't go past, and Mr. Faust and Mara Quinn decided they were going to go past, and they broke the skirmish line and they were arrested. So I believe that conduct was content neutral. I think that they had a significant government interest to prevent a breach of the peace down at the 9th and Main where the prior conduct had occurred. And three, there were alternative channels of communication. If you read the record, if you look at page 16, 20 minutes later, the entire group, with the exception of the appellants who were arrested, were down at 9th in Main after the parade, protesting with their signs, with their speech against the parade, and confronting the individuals who were participants in the parade itself. And two, during the course of the parade, they were able to hand out their leaflets of protest with their signs. And if you look at volume two, page 37 to 38, they were protesting all the way through. And three, I think we have to remember one thing, that where they were going, where they wanted to go, was after the parade. The parade was already over. They had already engaged along the parade route in their protests. The skirmish line was set up as that they was not a permanent skirmish line. De Hoyos testified and Gennaro testified that they just wanted to allow the people who participated in the parade get down to their spot on 9th and Main, and then they were going to let the individuals go. And they did, because, you know, 20 minutes later, Kingdom Baptist Church was down at the end of the parade protesting. So I think, one, that this is not a First Amendment case. Two, if it is a First Amendment case, it was the conduct of the police when they arrested the defendant was content neutral. There was a significant government interest. And three, there was alternate channels of communication of the appellants of the information they wanted to. And they did, ultimately, all except the appellants, because they were arrested. But the rest of the church, which consisted of 20 to 25 individuals protesting, they were down there protesting. So it wasn't a permanent. They weren't going to be permanently stopped from protesting. And I think that I don't think there's a First Amendment violation, and their convictions should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Mallon. Mr. Sharp, rebuttal.
I have only one thing that I need to take up. Since Mr. Mallon thought that I was mocking his, because I have such respect for him, I did not want him to interpret that. I was not mocking him. I was trying to express appreciation. But the fact that it came across as mocking him, would you please forgive me for that? Because I have too much respect for you in that. And I have nothing further, Your Honors.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you for your arguments today. We appreciate your briefing as well. Your case is now submitted. And this being our only case on our argument docket, court will now be adjourned.